you're listening to a Talk of Spirit Anime Cast. My name is Andrew, and I'm joined here with Chris.
Yo.
And today's episode is Isekai episode. Chris is shocked. It's been technically 5 years since we did our last Isekai podcast. Isn't that crazy? It feels like it was like last year.
Seems like it.
I literally was searching all over the website going, I know we did it recently. But it was funny because I realized that that was actually the time in which we did it, because it was odd because at the time, a lot of talk was coming around isekais. Like, there was this brewing sensation of people wanting to talk about isekais because what was really big at that time? Can you guess?
Well, seeing as how I cheated a little bit and got ahead, gosh, I know what the answer is. So
what is it?
ReZero.
Okay. Yeah, you did cheat. Gosh, Chris. Yeah, ReZero was pretty huge at the time. I mean, it was basically grabbing people's attention. Yeah, granted, we had like Sword Art Online just briefly before then. I think at that time we were getting the fatigue around Sword Art. A lot of people were kind of just going, again, our joke, it becoming the ex-girlfriend. Everybody just wanted to hate it, and anybody that liked it was terrible. But ReZero, thankfully, was kind of replacing it as like this beacon of isekai. Now, granted, the other argument for Sword Art is, at what point was it an isekai? One core. I mean, technically, the trapped in MMO concept, I guess, in general. Let me make specific there, is that was the first core. And it wasn't until technically probably the Underworld where you would consider it a trapped in isekai type of thing. Because, you know, semi-spoilers here, people. Somebody gets injured and gets put into a system without their knowing. Like, they didn't choose to put on a VR and go into a game. And so you can technically go back to that concept that was the original core, or first core. But, yeah, this is, it's an Isekai podcast, so we're going to talk about the concept of Isekai, different elements of it. And I think it's a cool thing to get back into just because so much has come out since then. I was like, updating the list that we have. Of course, whenever we do a topic-based podcast or genre-based, this is not technically a genre. It should be, honestly. Like, every time I go to a website, like AnyList or MyAmyList, and I want to look up isekais, it's like there's no tag for it because they don't consider it a genre. And I think at this point, with how many there are, I think they need to. Like, I think we're at the point now where you're getting to be more isekais than other genres that they always tag. Like, I think Magical Girl is... I wouldn't say magical. It's getting close. It's getting close. So I think it does need a genre. But anyways, when I was updating my list that we usually put in our outlines, it's just there's been so much since then. And of course, we've had literally this year an insane boom.
Yeah.
We had summer was literally half the season was isekais of some sort. You know, reverse isekais, regular isekais, trap MMOs, that kind of stuff. And so again, I think a lot of people are having fatigue around it, but our perspective has always been positive. And I think a lot of that has to go around just the uniqueness that each kind of offers. Do you agree or disagree? I think you want to bring up your couch idea.
No, I do agree. I was actually getting kind of a hankering to kind of delve into some aspects of this. I don't know if we will be going in the same direction, so maybe or maybe not I might still write an outline.
What's your concept? Should you spoil it or what?
No, I just know that I was getting a hankering for it. When I was going through your outline,
this is technically your outline. I just updated it.
Right.
This is the original outline, just with updated stuff and stuff I think is dumb removed.
My outline was the one that I'm kind of considering the idea of was kind of breaking down some of these newer ones and how they kind of fit in. I think back to somebody who had asked a question about isekais, and it happened to mention just a whole knowing that some of these were coming out, and then he made this kind of list of kind of the revenge isekai, the shoujo trapped in an otome game, and all that stuff, and how all these were coming in the future, and it. it kind of spawned off this interesting concept of how these isekais are actually breaking down, and now that we're finally getting to digest a lot of these, and what each one of them are bringing to the table, kind of like we did with the magical girl and dark magical girl a while back, of what is the mechanics behind these, which is something that I kind of wanted to do before, but it didn't really pan out the way I was planning it.
Well, I think to your credit there, the interesting thing that has come from the popularity of isekai is there's been such a large amount of isekais coming up. Like I said before, when I was looking at where we were at before and then where we're at now, that transition, I mean, we had maybe 20 before, and now we have probably over 100 maybe. So what comes from that is, despite the fact that most people are going, crap, there's just too many, this is getting too much, please stop, I'm sick of isekais, they hear the even mention of somebody transported to another world and they immediately shut it off. But the interesting thing that comes from just this large amount of isekais that we're getting now is that we're now getting subgenres of isekai.
Yep.
We're getting sub concepts of isekais that are technically branching and becoming their own thing. I mean, the one thing I joked about here recently is it feels like there's so many pharmacist isekais. And yeah, like you mentioned, the Atome game stuff. I don't think we're quite there yet with quote-unquote revenge isekais, because, I mean, what do we have? Shield Hero? I mean, I know that that specific Redo email was Hiller. Talking about... That's not an isekai.
That's true.
There is a lot of source material, and they were specifically pointing out source materials that were coming out, but there's not, like, an amount of them coming out. I mean, you can argue there's a point in Slime where it gets kind of revengey, but for the most part, you're kind of stuck with maybe one or two. Tsukimichi, Moonlit Fantasy, maybe?
And
it's not a vicious type.
We've even talked about the idea of, should we even classify isekai as a...
Build a Nation isekais?
Yeah. Should we even consider it a isekai? Here's the thing that a lot of folks should absolutely take into consideration right away when you hear isekai. Isekai is only a setup, is literally all it is. What it comes down to is it's really a fantasy show. The only real difference between a fantasy show and an isekai is literally how the main character goes from starts.
It's the setup.
It's the setup. So, yes, the isekai can be a mechanic in the storytelling. Usually it makes it a lot easier as far as world building is concerned, because you, instead of a random... paladin who's been in the world for, 30 years and is, and then ancient. some elf is randomly walks up and says, oh, as you know, all of this. And then wall of text. It doesn't,
as you know,
instead of doing something like that, you have the excuse of, well, this person is literally from another world, just like you are. And so, therefore, you don't know everything just like this person doesn't. So, in some cases, it makes it a little bit easier to
There's no exposition.
There is the exposition, but it's easier
It's not typically, the voice of God talking over a map.
Right. So,
narrator.
And plus, you at the same time, you have the relatability aspect of, I understand that this person is going into this world. I have the same issues as this person. Where's the toilet? I mean, as silly as that sounds, that would be a relatable thing. You don't
know. What are the
shells
for?
Huh?
What are the shells for?
What are the shells for? Exactly. I mean, it's silly things like that you understand the fact that this person doesn't understand where those things would be, because that's not normal that would be normal in our world, but not necessarily normal in their world.
So you just took out, I don't know, one line here and here in the outline, so I'm not sure where to start anymore.
But well, no, we can still dig into stuff like that. That's just...
Yeah, I'm not going to really go by our old outline completely. Like I said, I removed most of it just because I think it's stuff that at the time it made sense to really explain. But I think at this point, I think most people have that basic understanding. Just so I'm not going to go too detail. But yeah, I did really want to do this again. And I think another driving force me wanting to do this again was, like I said before, we've technically had plethora amounts of more isekais coming out. But not only that, but some of our favorite anime or isekais of all time have come out since then, plus some that you could argue are probably in our favorite anime of all time. I mean, that definitely makes it. I mean, Mushoku Tensei here recently, Ascendance of Bookworm, they're definitely up there as, like, definitely something that's worth checking out. And I think that's the saddest thing that comes with the plethora of isekais that have come out and people's unwillingness to touch them is when you do have things like Jobless Reincarnation and Ascendance of Bookworm coming out, and people don't want to touch them because they figure it's just another isekai. But it's like, but you don't realize at some point as we get this plethora of isekais, you're going to have those points in which somebody has an amazing story to tell. They just use that as the vehicle. And if you don't accept it because of the vehicle that it's in, you're going to miss that, you know, trunk full of cash that, you know, has this gem in it that you do want, which is really sad, unfortunately. But anyways, yeah, it's funny because in our original cast that we did for Isekai, you had it broken up. And like I think I pretty much helped with most of this as well. We had it broken up in two sections, which was trapped in another world or transported into another world, as well as trapped or transported into an MMO. And I think it's interesting that at that time, it made sense. Because at that time, you did have two different types of anime out there. One was... one specifically going to another world and one going to specifically a game. But it's so interesting that, and I think it's about the time where, and this is probably going to be an interesting conversation to come with, at some point, I think it's around after Kuma 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 Bear did it, but I think before then, you really had like Overlord and Log Horizon, and then it stopped.
Death March. It's nowhere near as many, that's for sure.
Death March... can you argue it? I'm talking trapped in a game.
Well, he was a developer on the game, and then somehow he got stuck in his game.
But he's not in the game. There's no person logging in and saying, hey, are you stuck in this game or whatever? Like, Overlord, he was logged in the game. The time ran out on the server, and he was just stuck in it.
Well, Log Horizon, they're in the game. He does have the menu that pops up, though.
Right, but we don't know if he's just in another world. There's nothing indicating that he's in a video game.
Well, even the one that I'm heavily waiting on is because MMO is even kind of misleading because
just game.
It just game.
Because if you argue that it's because there's things coming up on the screen, Danmachi.
Right.
Are you going to say that he's in a video game?
That one.
No, he's
that
in
one,
a fantasy
yeah,
world that,
one that
has
a
game
mechanic. Right.
I think.
We argued about that. We discussed that idea.
Yeah, I think the interesting thing that has come is at some point it seems like creators, at least, or storytellers have gotten tired of this idea of having to explain why somebody is continuously playing the game but nobody's telling them to stop and log out. Like, at some point, they got tired of explaining, you know, why is Log Horizon, why are they in the video game, why wouldn't their bodies give out or whatever? And I think they got tired of explaining that, so they decided to go, well, they fell asleep and woke up, and then they're in the game, a world that has game mechanics. And there's nothing indicating that there's servers issues, and there's nothing indicating that they're logging in or logging out. There's no indication of other players playing the game. They're just in that world with the game mechanics, so they don't have to explain what's going on behind the scenes.
Right.
And I think it's kind of fun that are interesting that that's actually happened.
And like I said, the one that I'm waiting on, it is technically he's clicking through the intro screen. It's not an intro screen. He's taking a survey and he is doing the character creation thing and he's clicking through it, and eventually he gets to a point where he either accepts or he does not accept. And when he wakes up, he is in this other world. He does actually go through the process of trying to log out, and he cannot. And that's the strange thing. is he technically in another world? He does have the screens that are popping up as well. And it's like, it's that one is absolutely not an MMO. That is a game per se. And it's one of those things is that's why I was saying we should kind of just let go of the whole isekai thing. It's just a fantasy that a character moves from one place to another is really the only difference.
Well, that's the thing of that, because I think the label of isekai at this point, with somebody using isekai as this, you know, element, this vehicle of which they tell the story, my argument, and it's one of the lists that I have for a section that we have in the outline called Arguments Against Isekais. And I don't really necessarily agree with that there's too many isekais. Like, it's just another type of storytelling. I'm concerned with similar elements. That's always kind of an issue with most anime. I mean, it's not just an isekai exclusive thing.
That's where we've talked about tropes before and stuff like that.
But the one that I personally have is my biggest beef with isekai in general is why bother?
Right.
Why bother being isekai? Like, why did this first episode have to do that? Especially when you have cases where the character grows up. Because one of the biggest fads right now with isekais is being born there.
Mm-hmm.
It's not just, you know, one-for-one transportation and you're still in their same body, or you might have an improved body, but you're in the world and people in the world would expect you to know what's going on in the world. Whereas, you know, like with Mushoku Tensei,
yeah, three off
you
the
have
top
a character just literally born. Faraway Paladin, literally born there. Right. And so there's no necessity to have the vehicle of that because
Catherine
you're going
well.
To have it explained to you. Catherine?
Catherine, villainous.
Yeah, technically. Well, like, technically she hit her head and then she realized that.
And then
that.
She realized, but yeah.
But yeah, she technically herself was born there. But that's my biggest argument has always been is it makes sense for cases like, you know, where they want to have somebody pop in when they're in their, you know, early teens because if you're later than early teens, you're literally an old man. but with the cases that, again, a growing trend where they're being born there, why bother?
With Spider?
Like, with Faraway Paladin. I'm loving Faraway Paladin. This is my best argument is Faraway Paladin. I love Faraway Paladin so much because it's the way that it's building the world is fantastic. But what's my biggest argument? Besides one point him saying some stupid line like, oh, he's hacking, which, again, indicates that he probably was isekai'd from the early 2000s because nobody has said hacks since 2000. nothing else has indicated that besides him struggling with telling them that he was there and him talking about how he let somebody down at some point, nothing affects the world he's in or his decision-making based on that. Now, Mushoku Tensei is a very rare case where I am perfectly fine with that pre-established context of him in the previous world because it's his driving force. It's what he always thinks about. It's what he's struggling with. It's what he's growing from. It's what he always has on his mind is those thoughts of what he went through previously. But most every other isekai, why? If you never talk about it again, why bother?
Well, even like Grimgar. Grimgar was one of those that they did it, and they totally just like wiped their memories effectively.
Yeah. They don't remember anything. They just know that there was.
They just know they came from another place. And it's like
was he was like crafting or I think he was shaving a plane.
Yeah,
he was trying to craft a plane because it was in his head. He didn't know what it was, but he had this vision of a plane, so he was carving a plane out.
It's like what, like Andrew's saying, is what is the point of doing it, especially if you're going to erase their memories? I mean, just because it was an entire group and all of them had their memories missing. It's one of those that's frustrating. I can see the reason why. Like I mentioned earlier, it's number one, the relatability. Number two, the ease of explaining the world mechanics. Things like that I can understand. But like we've mentioned before, it's in a way it's a lazy crutch is really what it comes down to. And this is where we point out the fact that that Jobless Reincarnation, the reason why it's so well done is the fact that they did not use that. Faraway Paladin is the same case per se-ish, where they don't use that as a crutch. They take the time to go ahead and both explain the world mechanics using him growing up from a child all the way through his life. They still use that to go ahead and explain the world. Where, like Andrew was pointing out, the problem with Faraway Paladin is it doesn't seem like they're using that in any way, shape, or form. So what is even the point in having that there? He's still going through the process of learning about the world through his growth. And maybe they'll go, as it stands right now, I trust the writer because he's done really well at taking his time. That, like I had mentioned on one of the streams, I said this Faraway Paladin, the cool thing about it is it's such a slow burn. It takes its
time.
Six
episodes of prologue.
It takes its time, and which is one of the cool things about it is it's the fact that it's paying off so well. It doesn't feel like my time, even though it takes so long to get to the point, it feels like my time hasn't been wasted.
Now, what's funny is I technically have an answer to that question on why bother. And it's obvious that I think the only thing that really holds it, because again, if you're doing something like Mashuka Tensai, it makes sense because you're using that previous knowledge to affect the current knowledge. Technically, Overlord does it as well. It's an aspect of he has this knowledge of what his guild did and everything with this particular crypt, and now he's in this world, so now he's going to manipulate it in some way. I think even in the cases where they don't want to have it play a part at all, I think the only thing that I can answer that by is their use of that still is to allow for the self-insert. Right. It's this idea that you're watching this character who was transported from another world. Even though they don't really play off of any of it, you still have that feeling like you're self-inserting and you can see yourself in that situation.
Like I said, the relatability.
And it almost feels as if they don't, like, dwell on that old world at all anymore. Like, literally all of these worlds, they never really... I mean, Tsukimichi was, like, the prime example of, like, a rare case of them ever dwelling on it. Like, he still is trying to figure out how to get back. And it only wasn't until he was, like, realizing about his family that he wanted to, like, walk down this path. But his end goal is still there. And you just have so few shows anymore where they're still talking about how they're going to get back and still trying to figure it out. They just accept it.
One of the fun things about Overlord and How Not to Summon a Demon Lord is it going off of that relatability aspect of the self-insert is how many their stashes. Like Overlord has this stash of all kinds of garbage in this big old dungeon that he's built and how he has this this protector of his stuff that that only geeks would understand some of the stuff that he's doing there. Or some How Not to Summon a Demon Lord did something similar in the last season where he has this stash of stuff and it's protected by this gorgeous character and
with CGI weapons.
Yeah, well, okay, forget about the CGI, but the whole
immediately pops in my head.
The whole point that I mean on that is these stashes of garbage that you toss in your bank and it sits there for forever. You never use it, but it's all there and it's all the very super unique stuff that nobody
limited
ever
uses. Limited time events, Chris.
Limited time events and stuff like that. So yeah, it that was one of those things that
was the thing, like when he comes in like this battle and he just like brings all these special items and it's literally they're all like event items.
Yeah.
Because they're one use kind of stuff and they're gone. And you're like, oh, it hurts my MMO self that he literally just used that item that obviously was from, you know, Easter event, you know, 2003, and you can never get it again unless you dupe it or something. I don't know. but I thought that was kind of funny because I'm looking at the notes and I'm seeing this concept of kind of pointing out elements such as the desire to return back to the homeland, those kind of things, and yet it's like they don't really do that anymore. It's like this was a staple in the Isekai that we viewed in 2016. And now that we're at 2000, almost 2002, or 2022, we're getting a different, completely different viewpoint of what's, I guess, a priority in most isekais. And the idea of returning, the idea of that transportation just seems to be so less important now than it used to be.
Well, the last time I think that I remember seeing that was pessimist rebuilding a kingdom, and he kept going on about, for a while he kept going on about back.
How Aurelius Hero rebuilt a kingdom. He was talking about, he was constantly trying to set things up so that when he does leave, she can take over.
Right.
And like, he's like, I'm just here temporarily. When I leave, you can have it back.
Right. And he wavers on that. It's not like he's absolutely convinced that he's going to leave. It's just one of those things that he feels like he has to.
Yeah. You come there, the obvious thing is that you'd want to go back, obviously. But I mean, it with Realist Hero, he's technically hitting heavy on, and again, this is one of those difficult things that you kind of forget because it never really dwells on it that much, is that the whole opening sequence was his grandfather saying, don't die alone.
Right.
And he was alone. But now he has an entire kingdom. He's got he's got a wife.
Yep.
Even though he's not, you know, going through with it. He has all these things. He technically has the harem building up really quickly. Why not? What is the point of going back? And I think a lot of them, you have this element, and I think this is why they don't really necessarily dwell on the concept of returning. Because what is, like, I would probably argue 99.9, if not even 100% of all main characters of isekais, they're typically people that are outcasts. They're neets. They're, you know, deadbeats. They're people that don't have things going for them. That 0.01% would be something like, I don't know, Black Company, Dungeon of Black Company. That dude had it made, and so he wanted to get back.
Yep.
But
that's
everybody,
true. I forgot about him.
But everybody else is like, they don't care. It's like, I'm better off here. And if it's something like Tsukimichi, you're like, dude, you got it good. Why do you want to go back?
Yeah.
There's nothing back there besides this girl that you think might have liked you and you missed your opportunity for. I don't know what you were thinking there. I don't even know if he was actually. It implies that he rejected her, but it seems like his memories is messed up there. But you have a girl that looks exactly like her in this world, and she'd probably be perfectly fine with you. And you also have this really cute orc girl that is sinister and stuff. I mean, everything seems like it's panning out. And I think that's why, an element of the self-insert, the fantasy fulfillment, the power fantasy element is, here's person in terrible situation, here's opportunity, and everything is just awesome. And I think if you have that moment where the character goes, you know, crap, how do I get back? Or, darn, I knew need to get back. Most of the viewers would be going, why? Why?
Yeah.
I mean, technically, the Saint's magic power is omnipotent. At first, she technically wanted to go back. She had nothing there.
Yeah.
It wasn't until she slowly built relationships. And then what happened? She never really talks about it again. She's perfectly fine where she's at.
Yeah.
And I that was another one that was now,
the other girl, possibly. I don't think they've actually implied that she's one way or the other. Yeah, she has family.
The main character didn't have anything.
Right.
Like, her mother just recently passed, and that was her only person she had. But the other girl, she had a family to go back to.
Yep.
And it sucked, because when they started revealing that stuff, it's like, oh, this is like completely different. This is the opposite effect. Mm-hmm. And yet they were trying to keep her there. Whereas the other girl, they wanted to get rid of her, but she had no reason to go back. I guess technically Shield Hero would be another situation where I don't know that he's ever really hit on it. But he did hate that world, and I would assume he'd want to get out of it. But, you know, now you have Reftalia, you don't have to worry about going back.
Yeah, that's very true. He's an odd one, because they have never implied either way whether or not he wanted to go back, but he did not want to be there. It's a difference in the fact of he didn't want to be there rather than wanting to go back.
It's like one of those things where he has a goal the moment he arrives there. Because what do they say? They say, oh, you're the heroes. Well, there's this growing threat. There'll be these waves of monsters. And if we can get past all these waves of monsters, the world would be saved. And I think they imply that they would go back.
Right.
And so he at least knows, okay, at least if I get to this level, we can get out of here.
Right.
Sword Art Online was the same way. Get to level 100 and you get out. So everybody's stuck there. They can die or they can sit around or they can get to level 100 and then get out. So there's at least a goal established right off the bat. And so I don't think they necessarily have to dwell on it. Even though, yeah, technically the crap that he goes through, you probably want to because it wasn't going so well for them. You already kind of established the concept of the fish out of water, which is, I think, from the very beginning when we first got isekais, that was really... What was the feel of it? Like, when we didn't really know what isekai was, and we didn't even have the term isekai, we're just talking about, you know, being transported to another world, the thing that was obvious that it felt like it was borrowing from was both the concept of a, you know, a world flips upside down concept and the fish out of water. And the world flips upside down kind of concept was when a character has a normal life and then they're not transported, but the world that they're in itself is just kind of thrown up and flipped upside down. So a prime example of that, which I think Bleach was a perfect example of that, is you have Guy is just a normal guy going to school and everything. And then suddenly one day, out of nowhere, there's these crazy monster-looking things. They're attacking his sister, I think it was at the time. Crazy chick shows up and slices the thing in half. She's in trouble, stabs him. He becomes like her, and then he's dicing up these weird monster things. So again, he's not being transported, but it feels as almost if the world itself gets flipped, and just nothing is normal anymore. Norigami's the same way. You have a main girl who is just a normal schoolgirl, and at some point she ends up running into this... this god, Yato, and he's a bum, but at the same time, when she sees a threat, he appears and takes care of it, and thus, this normal, everyday world is suddenly a lot more complicated. And so I think that that concept, plus the idea of the fish out of water, which you've already kind of gone over, which is the concept of just the feeling of not being where you're supposed to be. And that's really the simple way. It is literally... what fish out of water is. You pull a fish out of the water, he's no longer in his swimming around, he's now flopping around on the ground and he doesn't know where to go.
Just to throw it out there, I'm not completely sure on this, but for consideration, Sekai is world. So you would say this world, or you would say Sekai. Isekai, I think, would imply, because I'm not really sure on the E, but it does, EA is no, so not world or something like that. So
I've always seen it spelled IS.
Isekai? Sekai is, Sekai is.
Sekai, but I at the beginning of it, not E.
Either, right, I.
Okay, I thought you said E, the letter E.
It's pronounced
I thought you said E. I thought you Sekai. Literally said the letter E.
No, it would be I, but yeah, Isekai, EA would be IIE, I think, is the wording for no. So not world is basically my point, is that it not world versus world. So take that into consideration. I don't know. I'm not a Japanese expert. I'm just words I've picked up that would make sense to me.
Yeah. Like we said before, it seems like it's kind of concepting from both the fish out of water, which fish out of water has kind of been a concept with, technically, with reverse isekais for quite a while, because I think even before we had a lot of isekai concepts or transported to another world concepts coming into anime or storytelling, we had long before then a lot of cases where you have a person from, like, you know, say Nobunaga, just transported to our current times. So these reverse isekais where something from somewhere else is being pulled into our modern world has been something around for a long time, and those have always been some of the more entertaining and interesting elements of isekai, or not isekai, but fish out of water, where they're just completely not in their normal space. And again, that's kind of something that is carried over to the concept of being transported to another world, is this idea of being somewhere foreign, not knowing what the heck's going on, not knowing the elements, the mechanics of the world itself, and discovering those mechanics. So,
yeah, even Western audiences do that. Well, like, barbarian or caveman coming into the modern world and doesn't know what to make of a TV box, and they freak out over the fact that the magic box has moving people inside of it.
Magic box.
The magic box.
Yeah. And of course, some fun elements of Isekai is we have, of course, our typical method of transportation, which has always kind of been, I think it feels like some shows like to overdo other shows, and then some shows like to joke about the concept itself. I think the recent kind of interesting take on the transportation was probably Cheat Pharmacist, where it literally doesn't tell you. You said it told him eventually, right?
I want to say that they eventually
got into it. But when it first opened up, the first episode, it literally said, I just got transported here. Not going to get into it. It was like, okay, we're not even going to talk about it. We have things like Spirit Chronicles, where it feels like they want to combine elements. Because we had, obviously the big joke is the truck-kun. It's the truck that hits somebody. I think a lot of people claim that Mushoku Tensei was technically the one that popularized the truck because he gets hit by a truck. It feels like a lot do truck and buses, enough that it became a joke. Truck-kun. You just insert truck-kun, person gets transported into another world. I think even our last Isekai podcast, we opened it up with that, was, basically get your truck-kun ready. We're getting into Isekais. We've had other ones technically with Slame, he gets stabbed. We have the Overwork, which is like Death March. The Omnipotent Girl, wasn't that technically Overworked as well? I know killing Slime for 300 years, she was overworked as well. Overworked is one they use a lot, where they just get overworked and they just die.
Yeah.
And then the new world, they want to be relaxed. I think Grace of the Gods was overworked as well, because that was a big thing. The gods wanted to help him to have a non-stressful life.
Yeah, that sounds right.
Yeah, a lot of them doing overworking. Ancient Magus Bride, she just had books fall on her. Not Ancient Magus Bride.
I was going to say, no, she was sold.
Sinners of Bookworm, she just had books fall on her, I think.
Right.
So, we had an airplane, yes, technically airplane.
Child Prodigies,
and technically World's Finest Assassin. He got blown up in the plane, but he was in a plane. We had a 7-Eleven Bermuda Triangle. That was kind of weird. That was ReZero.
There is a lot of magic circles as well.
There's a growing trend of the unknown. Which is kind of weird, where it's just literally they fall asleep and they wake up and they're in the other world. Or they just talk about how the fact that they don't remember where they were, they just suddenly were in this world. Technically, Grimgar is in that case. Tsukimichi Moonlit Fantasy, he just wakes up there. He technically wakes up in front of a god, and the god tells him he's going to be moved over. But there seems to be a growing amount that just don't really know how they got there. The being in a school and the entire school being transferred is another big one recently with Spider So What... with the evolution for Dev Evolution was doing that as well. And then, yeah, like I said, there's the combinations, which is the bus and train, because we always have to one-up it. So, yeah, Spirit Chronicles was in a bus. We don't know why the bus started veering around for some reason, and then the train going literally bullet speeds through a residential area just slammed right into it, which, why a bullet train going through a residential area? Who knows? Yeah, what was the other one that I forgot and I wanted to bring up?
I do know quite a few summoning circles, so...
Yeah, summoning circles are huge, where the other world is summoning them. You have, Kimono Michi, Moonlit Fantasy...
Right.
Combine the two. Kimono Michi, Rise Up, that was it. That was the other title of it.
The,
Omnipotent.
Omnipotent. You've got the actually...
I thought she was overworked. She's actually was transported with
Dog Days circle. Actually did that, but they kept going back and forth, so...
Yeah, that's the other iffy area there is, can you call it Isekai or transport to another world when you can go back and forth? But it's like... But the concept is transport to another world, or the idea is, yeah, of not world. It's not as if it has to be trapped there. I think we just attached the trap concept to it when we got into MMOs like Sword Online and stuff like that. So, yeah. Oh, yeah, we had technically the worst. I think that's the worst. Because, with Tsukimichi, he tried to claim that he had the worst luck. And his whole thing was that he just appeared there. It wasn't like anything special happened. Which I think, that's a good thing. He didn't get hit by a truck or something. But I think the worst one's probably Konosuba. Because he literally thought that he was saving somebody from a vehicle, but it ended up being a very slow-moving tractor. He literally froze in place, had a heart attack, and peed and wet himself. that's not a good way of going, no. Honestly. Because then, basically the god is laughing at him in the afterlife about how terrible his death was and how embarrassing it was. So,
but he got a great wish.
Yeah.
Just take you with me.
Some would argue that's a terrible thing, but some would argue that's a great thing.
I agree.
Depending on if you're on,
but he got back at her.
On Aqua Team.
He got back at her.
He technically got back at her, but I don't think he likes it. I don't think he likes it. The other kind of element to Isekai is the destination. I kind of mentioned this before. This is something I got into, which I think is probably the thing that's been most interesting lately, is how some are mixing it up a little bit. And what I mean by that is, of course, the biggest popular one that used to be pretty much the gold standard for Isekais was you're just one-for-one transferred. So you, your body, is transported into the other world, and you're still you in your body. There's obviously, again, there's some that just have, like, slight modifications where they might be, skinnier or whatever, but it's typically you to you. And again, the troubles that kind of causes is you happen to be explained a lot of stuff. It does allow for the self-insert, obviously, but the thing that I've been liking, the trend that I personally like, the thing that I've been enjoying the most, is the new rebirth idea, which I think a lot are starting to pick up on lately. My favorite is the aspect that they're not technically transported, they just become a new body. Like, they're then born in that world. World's Finest Assassin here recently is doing that. Mushoku Tensei obviously did that. I think it's a better option. My only other one that I think has been a little more interesting lately is the concept of possession, where somebody isn't just transported there. They're put into the body of somebody who already exists there. And Spirit Chronicles was doing that. It was probably
Spirit
one of the
Chronicles
more interesting...
And Ascendance.
Yeah, Ascendance of Bookworm. And the thing that kind of creates is the idea that they don't have to do the idea of being born there and grow up, but they still get the knowledge of that period. So it's kind of like a skip button. they get all that knowledge of being born, raised, taught, but you don't have to experience it. Again, with Ascendance of Bookworm, technically she was put into the body of this girl named Mine. And she gained the knowledge of this family that was there and the fact that she was weak and all this stuff. She was very ill. The world itself it still has to be kind of explained to her, but she's kind of getting a little bit of a skip of all that stuff. Whereas again, Spirit Chronicles, the interesting take they had there is it almost feels as if the two selves were combated with each other at some point. It doesn't feel like the story is doing that, which just kind of sucks. But it was an interesting element that I thought was clever in that destination concept. Yeah, and then the other one was the, I don't know why I have it wrote as active role, but it the idea of being put into something that already exists that you have knowledge of. So examples of this is Overlord and How Not to Summon a Demon Lord, which these are basically where, with those two cases, they have an avatar that they've been building up in a video game, and then when they get transported into this other world, they're in that avatar. So it's something they technically created and molded, but it's not technically their own body. It's just this avatar they've built up. So, which I think is fine. I think that's probably I think it's better than something like a 1-1 move. So if I had a choice, I would go with that. So I think my preferences is usually rebirth. If not, maybe possession, active role, and then 1-1 move in that order.
Yeah, I think the active role one is an odd one, and I actually kind of like that, mostly because it gives you the like Andrew was saying, have the knowledge of the world, then you're being placed in it.
I'm renaming it Avatar. So Avatar from now on. Active role sounds stupid. I don't know where I was thinking with active role.
So it does give you a lot of leeway as far as it gives you all the leeway of having the character being moved into it, so you can have that, and you still don't have to do, like, for instance, the 1-1 move. Fruit of Evolution had to do this kind of weird thing to get them to the point where they were actually, because you, you're talking otaku being thrown into a world where they're going to have to suddenly become super physical. And so you have pretty much one of two choices: make them overpowered or cause them to become overpowered. Afurata had a very similar situation where the character has to literally go from zero to something. They can't just be overpowered right away. They want to actually go through the process of making them overpowered. They do want to give them those cheats, but they don't want them to be cheating right away type thing.
Yeah. So yeah, going to the next one, this is where we got into the outline segment for the arguments against Isekai, which we technically are to get into the idea of the similar elements, which I guess we can technically expand on that. Like I said before, I don't necessarily mind similar elements. I think the problem that I think the thing that I agree with for people's arguments about Isekai's having similar elements is when that becomes either too much of the focus or just nothing else provided that makes it different. Because again, to Chris's credit, when he brought up the idea of the couches concept, is yes, if as long as they're different in some way, even though they're all couches, as long as you can give me that one interesting element to it, I'm fine with it. And that's something that we've always kind of been intrigued by, I guess, by the Isekais, and be more welcoming of Isekai shows, is because we're always kind of looking for that different turn, that different take that they can get. And I would argue, I don't really run into many Isekais where I'm going, this is literally just this show. I always find something in there. I always find what the writer said, this is my twist. This is the thing that I wanted you to look for. This is the thing. This is my twist. And I think I'm very rarely ever let down. I think I've had times where I feel fatigue and I run into things like, you know, Death March Rhapsody or Another World with My Smartphone. I think those are like a few cases where nothing really is in there that I feel is unique enough where I'm, you know, able to watch it.
I don't know that I mean, I'm sure that you could probably bring one up and I'll go, I probably kind of let that one go because it was just, it wasn't working for me, but
no, you usually watch every Isekai.
I like Isekais.
You even watched The Cheat Pharmacist, and that one was like, I think the puppy wolf girl's cute, but I'm not getting anything out of this.
Yeah, that one was probably the hardest one to get through, I'd be truthful. But when it comes down to it,
but it had a wolf girl, so it was fine. At least Chris had that going for it.
I had to have my wolf girl. It is one of those things. I do enjoy them. So when it comes down to it, I'm probably going to watch it. I don't know that I've let that itch go away yet.
So itchy. But yeah, like I said before, the other one was why even bother with the Isekai, which I've pretty much beat that to death. And then the last one was that there's the biggest argument to Isekais is that there's too many. And it was funny because at the time that we first kind of made the first Trapped in Another World podcast, there really wasn't much. There really honestly wasn't much. And what I found that was interesting is as I kind of went through and updated our list, I started to try to figure out where was that point in which things got crazy. And it was funny because back in starting way back in like summer of 2017, which was like the next point after we did that podcast. So it took, you know, we went through a couple seasons before we got to more Isekais. 2017, you know, we had the 3 to 4 in summer, and that was it. We went to 2018, and we had probably, besides spring, every season had 2 to 4 of them. So that was, again, we're starting to feel like each season at least has to have one. And then we get into 2019, and that's where things, I wouldn't say ramp up, but you had that stability. You had at least every single season in 2019, you would have at least 2, 3, or 4 shows that were Isekai. 2020, it felt like it wasn't that big of a deal. I mean, again, spring we had 2, fall we had 3, the other 2 seasons was like literally nothing. I think the point, which I think most everybody was going to agree that things got a little crazy with Isekais, was 2021. 2021, we've seen a huge influx of Isekais. Starting off with winter, we had 6 Isekais. Going into spring, 6 again. again, like I mentioned earlier, summer, we literally had 12 isekais. Two of those are reverse isekais, so, you know, you can argue against those if you want. But at least 10, at least 10 isekais were in that season. And then now we're getting into summer or fall. You can kind of breathe a little bit of sigh of relief because we went back to six, but it's safe to say that 2021 has been insane with it. But I think the starting point was obviously 2019. If you want to make an argument for the real, plethora coming in. But I think most people were probably arguing long time ago, just having at least one or two each season was too much because it's like, there's got to be the isekai show each season. But again, I don't think it's bad previously. I will say I am concerned. I personally am concerned when you get like 12. Six, I don't really mind because technically you have, again, upwards of 40 shows a season. Is it really going to bother you that much that six of them are isekai? But I guess there is a counter argument to that, that if you have a lot of the big studios, you know, a lot of the big budgets being put into isekais and the lower budgets being put into other stuff, I guess you can make an argument. But I will go along with people that I think summer was a little scary. It was a little concerning that we had that many of the season was that. I still enjoyed them all, though. I think it's most all of them.
It's actually funny. One of the streams I was talking about recently, I was I got into this kind of tangent on jobless reincarnation, I want to say, and I was pointing out the fact that one thing that I am concerned about. I like I said earlier, I love these skies. I love the fact that we're getting them, and I'm having so much fun with them. But there's going to become a point, and this is what's kind of scary. Not necessarily that we're going to run out of them. I don't believe that we're going to run out of them anytime soon. That it seems to be a thing that they really, really are enjoying doing right now. My concern is eventually we're going to have that one. And maybe it was jobless reincarnation. I don't know. We're going to have that one. And that's going to be the top. So what scares me is at some point we're going to get this one that we're going to go, this is the one that no other one can compete with. And we at one point we kind of thought it was ReZero, and then we got.
I was going to say that.
And that's the thing is, like we said, there's always different things that each one of are doing. I'm not saying that. I'm saying that there's going to be this point where nothing will measure up to this, and it's going, and then you're going to have all the where I don't know. I don't know how to better put it. Is at some point there's going to be that one, and nothing's going to get to that point. It's going to be this.
What's interesting by that comment is you know what the conversation that we had that I think of the most when you bring that up. Was the comment that we had for the beginners of anime. What was the big argument that we made when we were talking about the concept of how to bring others in anime? We had like an entire podcast about introducing people to anime.
Yeah.
And what was the big argument that we had there?
Don't send everybody to the biggest names.
Don't just say, here is the top 100 anime of all time. Watch all these quick. Because what happens is when somebody's done with all those, the biggest, they watch the Cowboy Bebop, they watch the Full Metal Alchemist, they watch the Gurren Lagann, they watch all the big titles that everybody, you know, for a majority part, says is the greatest animes of all time. And what happens is they go, okay, I've watched all these, what now? And you're like, okay, now start watching seasonal anime. Here's Crunchyroll or whatever. Click on the newest season and watch them. And they go in there and they go, okay, so all these shows right here have one or three episodes each. All right, let's click on this one. Oh, this is really boring. Okay, let's try this next one. Wow, this is really boring. Because your expectation's high. You've ate the goldest of gold apples. And so everything else is like not that great. And the whole argument that we had there, and it's something that we got into a discussion about in our podcast about is anime dying?
Because
I made there was this idea of
the golden age.
The realization that most anime is just advertisements. And so they're not all going, and they're not all going for epic storytelling. In a lot of cases, they're just basic entertainment. They're just a television show.
Yeah.
They're not trying to be a golden art piece and a standalone. Most of them are just advertisements for manga. They're just spin-off comics about a joke concept. They're not all trying to be art pieces like something, you know, that would be an original series that's trying to blow people's minds, you know? And it's not a Yurikuma Arashi or something where it's trying to tell some epic tale or have some deep message in it. It's just a doofy show about nothing. And this group of people just want a doofy show about nothing. It's like, if somebody that just came off of watching, again, something, I can't think of his name, but the guy that does, like, the penguin drum and everything, and they're like, holy crap, that show blew my mind. It had all these messages and stuff. Hey, do you have a show that I can watch? And I'm like, here, I just got done with Super Cub. Watch Super Cub. And they watch it, and they're like, what's the point? I don't get it. She just got a Super Cub. She's riding around on a Super Cub. What's the point? I don't get it. She's found joy. Is that enough? Like, it doesn't need to have an underlying message about, you know, some crazy statistical thing about the relativity of these two people genders coming together, wrapping themselves into the vortex of the self-mind. It's just a cute show about a girl finding purpose and joy. So I totally forgot where I was going with this. But yeah, to your argument, it's just I think that was the immediate thought that I had, was just not really setting those expectations. And then when you have, even with things like Mashuga Tensai, and you've already mentioned it, and I was totally going to jump in there the moment you said it, ReZero was that feeling of when we got to ReZero, it felt like nothing can really outdo this. And then when you watched, it was at that time, when you watch other isekai after you just got done watching ReZero, it's like, I mean, ReZero is just so good. These are just not that good. And even with Sword Art Online before, it was like, when you watch ReZero, it was like, this is so much better than Sword Art Online. Now, granted, again, I still love the first core of Sword Art Online. ReZero was just doing so much more. It was so much world. It was so much the cults. It was so much about the sins and all that stuff around the world itself. There was so much meaning in that world itself. So much build. So much development. So many characters and so many great character arcs. How can you have something like, again, just to, I'm not, nothing against it, just wanted to throw a good example in here, throwing like Cheap Pharmacist in there, it's like, well, how can you compare the two? How, again, I think that's the key point to your argument is, and I feel the same way, if you have that fear of finding that one isekai that just destroys all and nothing, no matter how many they bring out, there's just no point to it. You still have the argument that, well, still, Cheat Pharmacist, you can't really compare it because it's about a guy relaxing in another world, being a pharmacist, enjoying some time with a cute puppy girl.
Yeah.
I mean, you can't really compare the two of them. But at the same time, I will admit, and I fall into this, and we fall into this because it's technically how we communicate to people's shows. Because our whole shtick here is not the bash shows. It's not to say that Cheat Pharmacist is a terrible show and I was bored to death and I could not stand it. It's to say, I watched Cheat Pharmacist. This is what it was doing. If that sounds interesting to you, check it out. And the thing that even us as viewers that, you know, create content for people to suss through the 40 shows a season, because literally barely anybody out there is going to watch all 40 shows every season. We're like that rare thing because this is what we do for people as content. For those people, when they're coming to us, the thing we're going to do is go, it's no Mashuga Tensai, but it was good.
I'm watching
it's
that.
No ReZero, watching but it's good. Oh, we're watching Mashuga Tensai now, and it's way better than ReZero. So now you know that on the scale of from, you know, again, Cheat Pharmacist to in the middle here, there's ReZero. And then quite a ways up above there, there's Mashuga Tensai. It falls probably just below ReZero in the scale, the isekai scale. But I think that's a good way for us, honestly, to, I guess, communicate that to people. If you've watched Mashuga Tensai, you're going to love this. If you like ReZero, you're going to like this. If you like Cheat Pharmacist, you're going to like this. So, yeah.
I'm literally having a blast watching a dude who's got a gorilla girlfriend, a donkey girlfriend, a Valkyrie, a cat girl. A
garbage show. Absolute garbage show. Anyways, I'm enjoying Muv Love. And it's technically Sekai. Come at me.
Well, that actually brings up an interesting point that I was kicking back and forth on.
Is Parallel Worlds Isekai?
Parallel Worlds. Because when I brought up Redo of Hiller, it's technically, you're right. It technically is not an Isekai. But from what I'm under the understanding, he is doing kind of a Parallel World slash redoing timeline type thing. So it's time kind travel, of, yeah. Yeah, he's time travel slash parallel line slash whatever.
Well, that was the argument that I had when I was doing my Isekai tier list, was I was going, okay, is Nobunaga Concerto technically Isekai?
He's going back in time. Yeah, you're right.
Hey. He's in another world. It's not... is Dr. Stone Isekai? That was a huge one for the longest time. Is Dr. Stone Isekai?
Well, that goes into some of the shonens. What about Bleach? He is going to another world.
Right, but it's spiritual world.
I mean, spiritual world.
That was my argument with... This is the thing that we always talk about all the time. Irumakun. He's going to the demon world. It's still technically within the bounds of his world. Devil's a part-timer. Is it a reverse Isekai?
True.
Is Recreators a reverse Isekai? Technically, they're in the world of this world. They're just in the books of them in the anime.
And see, this is
breaking
where,
things.
This is where I lean towards. It's better to just call these fantasy and just be done with the hook mechanic, because saying Isekai just kind of puts this big old label on it that says
this is a derogatory term anymore.
Yeah, it's almost a derogatory term. It's the frustrating thing of you have to. That's why we coined the idea of the brown couch idea. It's people are using this as a way to explain this, and it's not this. Grimgar is vastly different than, like Andrew was saying, the cheap pharmacist. It's not the same. They're nowhere near the same show.
And I don't think I necessarily ever really go out of my way to say things are Isekai. Granted, I do technically do a Isekai digest as kind of a fun video to do, but I mean, how do you do that with a review or whatever? Like, we're doing our first impressions or a review for something, and it's like it gets around to us talking about a show, and it's like, so this show is about...
Definitely not an Isekai.
This show is about a guy named Timothy, and Timothy, that's immediately the problem in my head. Timothy wakes up, and he's in a fantasy world. It's a fantasy setting. I mean, it's got, you know, dragons and everything, and I don't know. He gets moved there. He's there. It's like you gotta avoid saying he was. He wakes up and he gets hit by a truck, and then he wakes up and it's like, because again, going back to the previous point, you don't want to mention. You don't want to say the bad word, which is Isekai. Like, this show is in the Isekai. And it's about this guy that transports this other world, because you don't want to say those words because immediately people shut down. But at the same time, it goes to the argument of, this is why I hate that they do it when they don't play off of it, because what's the point other than to alienate people that don't want Isekai shows anymore? Yeah. Because you're not going to play off of it, and the show, like Tsukimichi Moonlit Fantasy, it's a great show. It doesn't... technically, that one plays off it a lot. Technically, Faraway Paladin's a perfect example. I think Faraway Paladin's going to be a perfect example going forward. Unless something happens within this first core where it gets into something that makes sense why it brought the fact that it was Isekai in there, this will be a prime example of something where when I explain or review it, I'm going to say, I don't know why it says that he's Isekai, but it's literally not the point, because he's raised in a tome, isolated from other people, then he goes out into the world, and he's basically doing spreading light in the darkest places of the world. But I have to mention that it's isekai because he does mention here and there that he's an isekai. I don't know why. There's no point to it. I maybe down the line, 15 volumes, he will have some thing come into play. But don't take this as being isekai as a negative thing because it literally never plays off of it.
I mean, we could go into speculation on it. I mean, especially where the tomb was and all that stuff, and maybe they needed a soul from another world. But
yeah,
outside of that, I mean, going outside of that, until any of that speculation is dispelled, it is just speculation. The point of it being is, it doesn't seem to be a reason for it. It just is a thing that is there. Like I was mentioning earlier, the fact that he grew up in that world, he literally has all of the things being explained to him as he grows up. It works just fine. The fact that he being being from another world doesn't seem to be the point of him as a person. So
yeah,
it's not like Jobless Reincarnation, where he is actually growing as he is growing
with the trappings.
Yeah. Yeah. His other world form is growing as a character as well as him growing as a person. So it's really cool that is the one time that I would go, that was perfectly well done. I love the fact that he is from another world.
So I guess you have a segment in here about the origins of isekais. We are transported into another world. We did kind of talk a little bit in our previous podcast about the kind of the question mark where the roots could be for this whole idea of being transported. It could be from like the whole concept of Wizard of Oz. You have the Connecticut Yankee in King Arthur's court, which is back in 1889. Alice in Wonderland, 1865. Of course, this whole concept was obviously going to predate the element of being trapped in the game, because obviously you don't have video games around for a long time. But you have a lot of concepts around the idea of shoujo characters or female characters being whisked off into another kingdom to fall for the prince. At the same time, male characters often find themselves in worlds where they can become the knight and save the world. So this is, again, technically a concept that's been around for a long time. Just, I think, bring it into more anime element really does often fall into the aspect of being about fantasy and gaining power, the power fantasy concept. Yeah. Whereas, again, typically, I think the female characters still technically fall into the realm of your standard shoujo concept of, you know, the handsome guys. I mean, technically here recently we had the Saint's magic power is omnipotent. She's just literally surrounded by a bunch of, you know, handsome men. I do think that Saint's magic power was enjoyable for me because it had so much more going for it than just that. I mean, the guy that she ends up kind of falling for is really cool. He's a cool dude. It's not just sparkle sparkles. My gosh, this guy's dreamy.
Pushy guy.
He was a cool guy.
Yeah. And the fact that she wasn't.
And she technically saved his life.
She wasn't bricks.
she didn't have him save her. She saved him. And yeah, not a bricks. That stuff just kind of. What was that one a while back that was absolute bricks character? Do I have it in the list? I don't think I do. But yeah, we had one a while back where this girl was transported in some weird kind of dome thing, and everybody was going to leave the dome, and she was literally just a bricks character. But anyways, the idea of it being appealing, obviously, is the whole concepts of the fantasy fulfillments is always good. And yes, Chris has in here specifically the world filled with Neko and Inu girls, which here recently in Himeshuka Tensei, we got to have that, which was great. Well, technically, we had Gislin early on, just not the, you know, more. More. Entire beast village. The other list that we have, obviously, is the whole concept of when we kind of started seeing that concept come into anime specifically. And also light novels and stuff. I think one of the early examples that a lot of people give is Aura Battler Dunbine, which is back in 83. We had the light novel and ONA later of The Wing of Rian. We had the manga of Fushi Yugi in 1992. From Far Away in 1993, El Hazard in 95, which I think was probably my first experience with an isekai anime. Because I did watch El Hazard a long time ago. I think that my appeal in that one was that I think I just got done with Tenchi Muyo, and it had literally, I think, the same character artist. Definitely looks similar. Magic Knight Ray Earth was huge as well in 95. Bunch of girls being transported into a fantasy world. Anatolia Story? Which one was that one?
I don't know.
That's in 95, though. I think the one that took off huge in the West, at least, was Inuyasha. And that came out in 2000. I thought that was earlier.
I mean, I would lean towards probably I watched El Hazard at some point, but Inuyasha is easily the one that I remember way too much of that one. So yeah,
I had a website that was literally all they did was dubs for, or not dubs, but subtitling for Inuyasha's and BitTorrents. And so I pretty much hit that every week. So bad. It was the only way you can get it back then, all right? It wasn't even being brought over. So yeah, there. It was a product of its time. I'm sorry. It was a product of its time. Just a brief run through. I'm not going to talk about all these isekais that I end up putting in this list. We did talk a little bit about Grimgar, Fantasy, and Ash. Vision of Escaflowne was a huge one as well. I think that was the... That was like the... Was it just before Evangelion, right? It's like a big, big budget TV series that they just poured. This was back when, again, pre-bubble, where you had... Studios were getting tons of money to make, like, insanely animated stuff. And Vision of Escaflowne was probably one of the most visually spectacle ones. And again, that was technically the idea of a girl going to another world, more shoujo. But it was an interesting twist of it because it had the mecha elements and stuff to probably appease the male audience as well, even though it was girl going over there and seeing sparkly, handsome guys. They weren't sparkly. They were handsome guys, though. And you had the rough, rugged guy, the rebel, and then the Prince Charming character. Gate was very interesting when it came out. More of an idea of military group going into an isekai world, and really the difference of technology. You have them going into a world full of knights and stuff, but yet they all have tanks and helicopters. It was just kind of a bloodbath, and it was a lot of fun. I really did enjoy it. It has a lot of really cool moments in that one. Outbreak Company, fantastic comedy. If you like Konosuba, you like comedy isekais, I think most people don't really, they kind of overlook Outbreak Company, but that was a really good one.
Speaking of Endride, I'm associating that with this
waiting
one.
For
I
it.
Don't know.
I'm waiting for it.
I am kind of curious as to, do you remember if, and like I said, this is not the same, so don't go, why did you think of that?
Speaking of Endride.
the one where I transported to an didn't I say to make my
abilities average?
Abilities average. Was she transported into a body? Or was
Why are you bringing this up with Endride?
I just said don't say that.
That's what I'm saying.
She didn't. Was she full grown?
I think it just starts out with her like that. I don't think they really explain of her being grown up or anything.
Because I don't remember. I do remember her saying that she only references the place that she was before and the place that she is now.
Yeah.
Because she had friends there. But I don't know if they actually explained that she grew up in that world.
I want to say that she did because she talks about being in a school at some point and then she left that school for another school.
Right. That's why she has friends. But like I said, I don't remember if she said that she was born and then she grew up into that and then went to that school and then went to another school.
I think if I remember correctly, they had her pass and then she was in like the whole midsection area, like the purgatory, not really purgatory, but the pre-rebirth segment where some person's talking to her about
right.
what she wants. And then she chose the body, I think, at that point. But I don't remember. Why did that bring up Endride?
Like I said.
No, I'm just curious of why you said that at first. Like, what is that? What did Endride trigger there?
Endro or the...
Endro, okay. That makes sense.
Yeah.
I was kind of thinking Endro would might have been it, so... Anyways.
I know. That's why I said it's not... has nothing to do with Endride. Please don't point out the fact it has nothing to do with Endride.
Then why'd you say it? ReZero, obviously, that was like, again, the trigger for us doing our last outline, which is just Incredible show with really incredible characters. I just enjoyed every bit of it. Have they said when they're going to come out with the end of the season of that?
Of which one?
ReZero.
No.
I don't think we've gotten any announcement yet. It's going to be another 6 years before we get another one. I didn't highlight it, but Nobunaga Naruto, I really did enjoy that one. It's just literally... it just feels like, at this point, this far away, we're going into just source material bait at that point. But I had a lot of fun with it. Obviously, that time I got reincarnated as a slime, that was a really huge one when that came out. Rising of the Shield Hero, I'm very cold on it at this point. I don't know why. I kind of told most people I think it's because that later part really did left me cold. But it's coming back here soon, so... we'll see if it can
pick I'm
it
still up. A fanboy as it stands right now, so.
Yeah. Well, I mean, obviously, Reptilia. Philo. I mean, come on. Like I mentioned before, Ascendant of the Bookworm has literally become... I need to go and check where... because I really do need... we need to update our top list of anime of all time. And I'm kind of wondering at this point if it can fit itself in there. It's that good. I've been enjoying it that much. I like... similar to Super Cub... I do like the fact that I think a lot of our, you know, repetitive talking about Ascendance of Bookworm has managed to get people to watch it. I love getting the comments from people on Twitter and stuff saying, hey, I finally went and checked out Ascendance of Bookworm. I'm really enjoying it. I've got to get on the second season, whatever. So I'm glad that people are picking up on that. And again, we have literally another season coming up here soon, so I'm super happy. Konosuba, obviously, if you are anybody, you know, that's literally one of the It's not just an isekai. It's literally one of the... It is probably, some would argue, the funniest anime out there. There's no reason not watch Konosuba. It's that good. No Game No Life, I'm sure Chris can say a few
definitely.
Words.
It's one of those... the cool thing about No Game No Life is the odd and very unique world mechanics that this world is placing. Yes, it toys on the otaku culture... and that's probably the lesser of the more interesting aspect of it. The world mechanics is what I really do love about this show. The otaku culture is just a cherry on top. That one having this kind of, interesting, everything is literally decided around games of some sort. And it's not video games. There is video games, but it's like, poker or blackjack or chess or something like, and then the ability to adjust the rules as well, and that which makes it very interesting. I really do enjoy it.
Think Kakegurui mixed with Lucky Star mixed with an extremely etchy show, and that is literally No Game No Life. I just thought of that. Plus, you know, some really cool art style. I did like it. It's got a very unique, very neon art style to it. So, yeah, there you go. Sadly, we did not get a sequel announcement for it here recently. We got a manga announcement for it. I might actually check out the manga.
Yes, Ixion Saga DT is definitely in isekai. It's that one I would probably argue is probably one of the worst. You should actually watch it just so that we could... so I can feel like I'm not wrong on that one.
Okay. You done?
That one's special. I'm just going through all these scenes in that show. It's a mess.
Yeah, we talked about Mushoku Tensei: Jobless Reincarnation to Death. It's a literally... if I had to make my list right now, it's going to be the number one. So definitely, I think if you don't watch any of these, Mushoku Tensei, Ascendance, ReZero, probably up there. Konosuba. Tsukimichi Moonlit Fantasy was definitely a huge surprise for me last season. Thankfully, we got a second season already announced for that one. That one's more in the... its concept is more in the idea of somebody being transported to another world, and the goddess there literally saying... ew, you're gross looking, don't touch my humans, go live on the edge of this world with the demons, and don't procreate. And so he goes there, and he's literally an outcast, and it's almost as if he's not a bad person, but you can technically get the gist that he's technically the bad guy of the world. And it almost feels as if it's going that direction, like him building up to the point where he's going to be the villain of the world, because the goddess don't like him. and he's struggling with everybody else to survive in this world that exiles anything that's not a gorgeous human.
It is one of those things that I at some point we kind of started poking around that idea, and it is a really cool and interesting aspect of literally you are seeing the birth of the Demon Lord in that world, and it's such a twist on
the powering up concept is so stupid. He literally dies a million times without even thinking about it.
It is literally one of the most fascinating things about that show is that aspect of, and he's a cool guy. He's not a jerk or anything like that.
He's a jerk to Tomoe.
Yeah, whatever.
He treats her so mean. She's perfect.
He treats all the girls like that. What are you talking about?
No, he doesn't. He doesn't treat the spider chick like that. He just treats Tomoe bad.
That's because the spider lady would love it.
That's technically true, but you can punish her by telling her I don't want to be around her. Anyways, Faraway Paladin is a more recent example. Really enjoying that one. Faraway World's Finest Assassin started pretty solid with an interesting concept. World's Finest Assassin starts out with the concept of somebody that's actually quite old. In anime terms, he's ancient old dude that is an assassin in our world that gets transported into another world, being told that he has to kill the hero in that world. And so he retains that knowledge and technically mistrust that he had from his previous world in this new world. I think the last few episodes have been kind of weak. I'm hoping it picks back up. We'll see, technically 2 days. But it's got a really cool concept there, and I'm really excited to see where it goes. But Faraway Paladin, like I said, we've mentioned to death, I think, already in this podcast. Very interesting concept. Just so much world building. The fighting mechanics, so good. I love the fighting mechanics in the world. It's just so much more than just pew, 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 and slice, slice, slice. And I think that's got a good thing going for it. Like, counter spells. There's tactics to the fighting itself. And like I mentioned in a whole video I made on the topic, interesting that Faraway Paladin is a positive take on the Man of Cloth. You don't necessarily have good popes and stuff in the world of anime. Typically, priests and popes and paladins are not necessarily the good guys in anime. They're always the bad guys.
Don't worry. According to the outro, we may be bumping into one soon. So,
I wonder what?
A man of the cloth.
Oh,
is bad.
Yeah. I think, I don't know. We'll see.
And he has a cute girl.
He's got a cute girl. Well, that's why I mentioned in my video as well. Is typically the priestess girls are always good, though, but they're always corrupted by evil popes. But yeah, there's a million more, but that's the kind of the ones I wanted to kind of point out rather than making this video or this podcast extremely long. So you had questions put together. I don't remember how we answered them last time, but we have a billion more questions now than we did before. But which shows do you think does characters better? The first question is, how many of these questionnaires that you made back then is just going to have Mushoku Tensei in it? All of them?
I don't know. That's
maybe all of them.
Characters, I definitely would probably lean towards Jobless Reincarnation for sure. Because I think that show...
It doesn't waste characters.
Yeah.
I keep mentioning the fact... Ever since they messed around with Nokopara, which is this horse guy that I thought was a jerk, ever since they actually had him come into play as an interesting, important character, I haven't been able to let go of the fact that... And again, Geese happened the same way. It's like, there's no wasted characters. A character I literally called in my notes the thief guy because I didn't think he was important. Eventually, I go, oh, no, his name is Geese. Like... His name is Geese. He's not the thief guy. Geese is important. I'm blown away. Like, even here in this last episode, I'm not sure if you watched it or not, they just had this random guy that literally looks like he came straight out of ReZero as Beetlejuice.
Yeah.
And I'm like, who the heck is this guy? He's a nut job. Get him off the screen. And then at the end of the episode, I'm going, and he's probably going to be important. He'll probably come into play later. Like, nobody, literally nobody's wasted in that show. Literally nobody.
That show is the... definition of character study. And I mean, the fact that we go and praise this show about the, where we've been sitting here bashing or complaining about the fact that almost none of these isekai actually does anything with the fact that they are from another world. This is the one shining example of a show that not only does something with the fact that the character is from another world, it is praiseworthy that they are using that and making the character grow in the fact that they have come to another world. One that you could kind of argue does it almost as well is ReZero.
Yeah. Well, that, ReZero is funny because it's like the one thing that I always joke about with a lot of people was that transition from season one to season two in perspective is where we had season one. A lot of people were, you know, oh my gosh, I can't stand people's love for Rim. It's all about Amelia. And my argument was to those people is that I don't understand Amelia. It's not that she's a bad character. She's cute. I don't understand why Subaru is bonkers about her. She's cute. I understand that. But I don't get the craze. I loved Rem because what character really blew up in your face? This is me as a character. This is what I'm willing to do. This is what I sacrifice. It was Rem. Amelia was a side character. It wasn't, again, and then what happens in second season? We get her full backstory. Like, literally, she gets a whole core to herself, and I go, she's an awesome character. And even with characters like, what the heck is the tiger guy's name? I know it's a very Western name. Garf. Garf, I'm like, okay, this guy is loud, he's rough, okay, cool. Character backstory. I love this guy. love him.
Make no mistake, ReZero is definitely a character study as well. And
but I think they do it in different ways.
Yeah,
and
very different.
But that's ReZero. Like, ReZero does everything in a different way because ReZero has a reset mechanic. And so how ReZero does character study and character building is that you see them from every perspective. You see them as a villain. You see them as an ally. You see them as a neutral party. You see all from every reset. You see every character from different angles. We've seen Rem as an enemy. We've seen Rem as a diabolical killer.
Yeah.
We've seen Rem as a, you know, basically a lovey-dovey maid. We see Rem from every
We've
angle.
We've technically seen that
a protective
with
sister,
Amelia, as
a
well.
Serving a subservient person to Rosewall. Yes, Rosewall. I'm already forgetting the names. We need another season. It was a study from different angles. Whereas Mushoku Tensei is a character study from time. It's a perspective of seeing somebody in growth of time. And I think that's equally as cool.
And that's one of the things that I'm excited about with Faraway Paladin.
So we get more characters.
Yeah.
We have one character.
It's funny because somebody was asking me if I thought Faraway Paladin it was on the same level as Jobless Reincarnation. And I said, I pointed out the fact that we haven't gotten enough. It is a slow burn, and it's not a show that can be put on the same level as Jobless Reincarnation. I'm not saying it's not on the same level. I'm saying it's not there yet. Because you literally, we've only got, what, 7 episodes of Faraway Paladin, and technically we have season and a half of Jobless Reincarnation. So it's not fair to... Because immediately, Faraway Paladin...
Three times as many episodes.
Yeah. It's not fair to put them in the same category.
That's right. The other sad thing is that... depends on what you're coming after. Because with Faraway Paladin, so far, we have world. It's literally spent all of its time on world. It does have quite a bit into the main character, Will. But for the most part, we've established world. And with... At least with Mushoku Tensei, it's throwing everything at you at an insane speed.
Yeah, that's true.
Even though they're masterful at making it to where it doesn't feel rushed. Like, the pacing in that show is just
on perfection. On point, yeah.
And yet they're getting so much content out there, it blows your mind. But it's different perspective, and like you said, technically 3 times as much time. The concern that I had from the very beginning, not really technically from the very beginning, it was halfway through the show, of Faraway Paladin is... How many more seasons we'll get from this? Because technically we're 6 episodes in and we've only literally prologued it. And so the concern that was an argument that we had when we were talking about Mushoku Tensei as like a greatest anime of all time contender is there is an argument to be made that Mushoku Tensei goes up in my list of my favorite anime of all time because I know they're planning on doing the entire thing. I have no fear about coming to the end. Well, I have a fear about this season ending because I know that I'm going to have a long time before I get into the season, but I know it's coming. It's just so rare. Fruits Baskets technically had that feeling, was like, oh, thank goodness. I don't have to worry about the core comes in and I'll never see anything else from it. I don't know that we'll ever get anything more Far Away Paladins. So it does technically harm it when you don't know if it will continue. And that's sad, but
and as slow burn as that show is,
right?
Yeah, it's even more of a concern.
Exactly my fear. It's exactly what I've been saying with every video I make of that show. Is slow moving, which is great, but will we get more? Ascendance of Bookworm is great characters too. Oh my gosh, dude, mine is, she's so great. It's been so long. Is it not? I want to say Tart. He was barely in the last season too, and I think that's hurting him too. Just great characters. The her childhood friend, his parents are great. We had the Nyanko guy come into his last season as well. He's fantastic. Just great characters overall. You've already mentioned ReZero. Technically, yes. You technically have your girl from, oh my gosh, Mouse Work. What's her name? Your girl,
Rory.
Rory, you have Rory from Gate. There you go. I think I really like the mage girl too, but I forget what her name is. But Grimgar Fantasy Nash, I love a lot of characters in that show. Even characters I hated in that show, I end up loving in the end.
Yeah, but the downside to that is that
Ronta. Ronta.
having great characters and having excellent character building is a little bit different.
Sure,
just throwing it out there.
You're saying characters better. I'm not sure we had established if it's building or not.
Well, which show does characters? I was implying.
Are you saying that Grimgar doesn't have good character building?
Yes, it does.
Gate, I would go with you on that. It's not that there's anything wrong with Gate, but they're technically the sum of the moment you're in.
Right.
It's not as if you're... Yeah, you technically learn about Rory and the whole situation with her and this... guy of the, I forget what it was, like some ogre god of the underworld or something like that, that she's trying to get away from. I don't know.
There was that weird. and the going up to the UN and going, I'm 507,000 years old and you are just babies. It was such a great scene.
So which show does world better? We just mentioned Far Away Paladin. I think that's doing an excellent job of that so far, but what else?
That is a tougher one. I would lean towards, and this is, I'm going to have to say probably shows like No Game, No Life, where it does seem to have. Now, the funny thing about No Game, No Life is, as far as we are in the show, and hopefully maybe if I ever get through the light novel, or maybe we get lucky and actually get more to the show, there is the fact that because the quote unquote god of the world is basically, who was he? What was his title?
I don't remember. Don't ask me.
He was basically the game god, is really what it comes down to. And he was, in a way, the mischievous god type thing. And he set the world up, basing all the world's rules around the idea of games. And the interesting thing about that is how much time the writer takes to explain that to its fullest extent. Now, in a lot of cases, it does feel like it's a convenient factor, but he seems to be fairly, and this is why I say I'm not quite sure I would want to go farther down the road of the storyline to see how strict he is to those rules, because that in a lot of cases sometimes those rules feel convenient, but as far as it stands so as it is now, it has not broken those rules, and it takes the time to explore those rules very, very far. And that is one thing that I give that story. That's why I said that's probably the most intriguing thing about that. The otaku culture is a nice cherry on top, but the world itself is one of the more fascinating things about that show. And I would agree with Andrew, the Far Away Paladin is fairly well done. I do like,
You're talking about mechanics or world?
Well, I kind of put
we're having the same problem as last time. We went from characters or character build to world mechanics.
I think
world as if, like, you know, just the context of everything within it. I would give mechanics in there as well, but I typically put mechanics separately from quote-unquote world. World, I'm more looking at, like, you know, tribes, the relationships between nations and all that kind of stuff. And granted, any show can just throw a bunch of names out there, but to do it in a way that it's entertaining and slowly pieced out, I think ReZero is a prime example of perfection there. ReZero is not doing it too much that it's too much to really follow or it gets boring, but kind of piecemealing it over time. Now, granted, I have several times, even in the second season, where I was going, I wish that they would get done and get into this. Get into, say, the different witches. Get into that stuff. Show me the history of them. Get into all that stuff. And then it'll turn and go over here and go, we're going to show you this right now. And we're like, okay, good, I love this right now. But can we get back over to here? What about the princess thing that they were doing, the competition thing for the princesses? Like, when are we going to get back to that? We're over here for a long time. There's just so much stuff, and I love every bit of it. Everything that he presents, I want to know more of. And there is a fear that they'll never get around to explaining everything because there's so much stuff being unraveled, but I love every bit of it. Whereas I think something like that time I got reincarnated as a slime, reincarnated as a slime is like a different aspect of that, where it's more about it's nation building, but it's also like nation relations and stuff like that. So it has a lot of focus on making sure that he not only builds this nation, but everything around it is kind of kept at satisfactory. Like, everybody is at peace. There's no conflict there. It's got a lot of, like, we joked about the second season having, like, literally pretty much a core of nothing but meetings. And there was an argument that a lot of people had against that. But at the same time, if you think about it, it's what the writer does well. He doesn't skip over that these nations have to have relations. They have to be in an understanding. The concept of him becoming a demon lord or whatever is important that everybody understands and that nobody's out of the loop, because it's kind of a big deal. And that, so it's got a kind of a different take on doing the world building that I think is equally as interesting.
That was one that I was getting ready to point out was slime. I do like, I agree with you. The problem is that it becomes so blurry back and forth, because the more and more you go into it, like I said, you're right.
I know.
the problem is that if you go into like you were saying, the witches are an interesting aspect of the line gets so blurry between going into the witch's backstory and how they've grown, and then going into what is the witches. Those are two very different things. Somebody might be good at solid at writing a character study on the witches, and yet differ on what are the witches. As it stands right now, we really don't know either, so it doesn't really matter. But that's what I have a hard time, and that's why I'm trying to get focused on that. But you're right. I was going to mention slime, but I wasn't really sure if I should, because I didn't want to sound like I'm – because I like slime because it has a lot of really fun characters, but I never really been big on their world building aspect, but it does have a solid world building in where it goes into like the demon, Walpurgis and whatever the heck that thing is called. And the mechanics behind a lot of the world, how the world works in that game. but yeah,
it does have prompts and information.
Yes, it does.
It must be a video game.
And it has a narrator that tells him when he levels up and everything like that.
Gaining skills. And then equally with, I think additionally to that, like we've already mentioned Faraway Paladin, Mushoku Tensei I think is very similar in my what I just explained with ReZero. Whereas Mushoku Tensei technically does I would say that Mashuga Tensei is a lot more focused. Like, where I mentioned with ReZero, it finds itself jumping around a lot, but never really explaining things fully. And so you'll have almost that ball aspect. Like, the, you know, you're looking at the whole thing with the princess competition thing, and then suddenly, ball! Now we're in this little, like, weird demi-plane kind of sanctuary place, and now we're dealing with that, and then ball! Now we're trying to figure out Echidona's back history or Emilia's back history, and then ball! Now Garf's time. It never, like, focuses on one thing until it's, you know, it's satisfactory. Whereas Mashuga Tensei is kind of like walking down this path and never really straying, but maybe a couple times. There was, like, one point literally pretty close to the end of the first core where suddenly, ball, you're way over here. But for the most part, it really does kind of get to the point of certain things and then moves on to the next thing. And like I said, like, I think ReZero just has, like, just a lack of, like, not a bad thing, but it jumps around a lot. And it never really kind of reveals all of its cards too quickly. And so I think for both, they do the similar things where they both have a very vast and well thought out world, but they think they both kind of go about telling them differently. Whereas I think Mashuko's like, just let's take our time and get there, I guess.
And obviously you don't have you're missing the brilliance of Spider. You've missed the brilliance of how well world built that show was.
Tell us more.
No, that one is very is actually kind of the opposite. It, while I love the characters in that show, I love the story in general. That one has a really hard time. It feels, in a lot of cases, very disconjointed. Mostly in the fact that because of the jumping back and forth, and this is probably the one thing that that me and Andrew both kind of agreed on. I had a hard time with following what was actually happening in a lot of cases. Now, why does that matter? Mostly because as you're trying to understand the world itself, you're constantly going back and forth, and it always felt like the rules were bending in a lot of cases. And that could be the case because of the fact that you're talking about overpowered main characters or whatever have you. If you don't get a kind of a grasp on the rules of the world, an exact opposite would be kind of Grimgar Fantasy and Ash, where the world has a weight to it, and you know that things are going to happen, and if those things happen, there is this consequence. You don't feel that with Spider so much. Well, yes, she's constantly feeling like she's the underdog. I'm not downplaying how she plays as an underdog. I'm downplaying the fact that you don't have the same kind of weight as far as what's going on between the characters.
Are you trying to transition to our next question?
No, there's a reason I'm doing this, and that is the exact opposite of what I was talking about with like No Game No Life, where the rules are set up, they are pointed out, and then they play within the rules.
It was technically one of the things I was most interested in. It was the mechanics of Spider. So what was interesting? I don't think the world itself was that interesting because they literally had like what, three nations they focused on, and that was it. But the mechanics itself were probably the thing I enjoyed the most trying to speculate on. Although technically early on, I felt a lot of fatigue because I had that same experience with Slime, and I felt like I was doing it again with Spider, even though. Aoyuki.
Well, and that's what I was what I'm trying to explain is the fact that you feel like you have the rules set up and you're trying to understand how the characters are working within those rules, but it didn't feel like it made sense when she would kill a dragon and she'd get a whole bunch of experience and then she'd get a whole bunch of levels. Were you more speculating on her powers or were you speculating on who was the quote unquote person in behind the veil on in the other world. You were trying
both?
To exact. Well, no, you were trying to understand.
I literally was making videos on it.
I know, and I'm trying to say that's what you were speculating on. The levels themselves is and the rules of the world mechanics was not exactly it. You were speculating on the grander scheme of things, which is not. It wasn't. It was all mucked in the going back and forth between the two worlds. Where yes, you were getting this. You could speculate, but it was. It doesn't matter.
The skill speculation stuff was more specifically around like the concepts that was really kind of being played with on the other side of the story, which was the humans. They were playing heavily on the concepts of like not leveling up to gain skills because it was taboo and there was this one skill that nobody was allowed to have, otherwise the church would be angry about it. The idea of pulling skills from other people, all that stuff was more the interesting skill aspects. It wasn't so much with Kumiko and just, yeah, the screen being filled up every time she kills something and I don't know if this means anything. Like, that's a lot of text on the screen.
Well,
don't know if I care.
And again, that's kind of what I'm trying to say is it felt like it
was overflooded.
It was becoming too mucky. And when it comes down to it, I feel like I'm bashing this show.
You brought it up.
I know because I want to explain the fact that
it's just a bad adaptation.
And that may very well be. It didn't feel like it made as much sense as something that does take the time to explain the world. And that one was one where I would love to actually say that about that show, but because that one feels like it should be a world built show, but it doesn't. It feels too mucky and miry, and it doesn't get to a point with a lot of these things that should be the world building part. Yeah, it throws in things that could like the administrator and stuff like that, which could be something interesting, but it was so stuck in this weird world of blah rules, and it's like, okay, how many of these rules actually matter?
True. So yeah, what shows do handle the weight of the situation better? One that immediately comes to my mind the moment that I read this is obviously ReZero does have a lot of feel of, I guess, suffering. But I think the weight aspect, I think, is better played in something like Grimgar or Fantasy Ash. I think that was probably the one that I feel encompasses that question the most. Because Grimgar and Fantasy Ash, for those who don't know, is basically slice of life isekai. Like, they're in that world, and it's not just they're in that world, power fantasy, everybody gets all good and we're all powerful, save the princess. Grimgar was more about the underdog. It was the everyman of a world, and they were technically isekai there, but they're the grunts. They're just starting from the bottom, they're having to gain skill, and the dangers of what they're facing is very obvious, and it's not a happy-go-lucky world. It's not a power fantasy world at all. It is building from the bottom up and the struggles of doing that. And I think the way that they actually portrayed that weight is just bar none in the world of isekais. Now, granted, again, I do acknowledge things like Mushoku Tensei. What I like about Mushoku Tensei in that regard is how every situation he gets into, it's not as a simple, okay, well, I'll blast them. Every situation that he gets into, Rudy gets into, what's the first question in his mind? I should probably leave. He never thinks jump in there and be hero. It's always, should I do this? I could technically die. Like the moment that they have this village he goes to is being attacked. He goes, they never listened to me. They wouldn't listen to me. They wouldn't let me explain. Instead, I was doused with water and over again. But I can't let this happen. Like, here's this guy. He's going to take away this cute puppy girl. He's dangerous. I shouldn't do anything. He can kill me. It always feels like he always starts with but I'm not the hero. I'm not invincible. And I love that is willing to do that in almost every situation where it is obvious that he could technically die. Well, I don't know. I guess if he does die, we might have a situation where we'll find out if he can die. I don't know. Again, ReZero, I think, is just more suffering. I do think it well portrays the idea of him struggling to just want to protect the people that he wants. The people that he cherishes, he wants to protect them. Again, early on, it felt like a goofy show with him going, I want to save this cute girl. But over time, it really does feel like it's more about, I want to protect the people that I care about.
Even
and, yeah.
And that one had the, how it pulls off the weight of each situation is it plays these moments of how much, like Andrew was saying, the kind of the torture moments of this one or this scene or that scene. And yet it still plays those off as, when you see something similar, it almost has these kind of trigger points of, I know what this moment is and what's the consequence of that moment. And then as these moments build and build and build, it finally gets to this point where you get to that ultimate, where we've pointed out the checkpoints of where we're hoping for that checkpoint moment. And even in this last season, where a lot of characters were like, look, you can't do these things by yourself, let us help you. And it was a moment of him finally grasping the idea of that he literally can't do these things alone. And that added more weight to these situations where he was taking it all on himself to literally relieve everybody else of the weight of the situation, and all the weight was going on him. And he was literally overwhelming himself with all that weight. So in a lot of cases, ReZero,
the carriage driver had to beat him up.
Garf did too.
Yeah. Well, he was slaughtering people too. At that time, he was technically slaughtering people.
Like Andrew had mentioned, Grimgar of Fantasy Nash, I wholeheartedly, that's why I brought it up. And I wasn't bringing it up for this. I used that as an example of something else, but it's another one of those that it builds the world well. And part of the world building was showing you that, hey, this is not your typical power fantasy type show. This is literally Ronta going in there and trying to kill a goblin, and it don't die as easy as it does in the video game, where you go A and things die.
Yeah, they have to fight quite a bit to kill one. Like, all together, five people just trying to kill this one goblin, and that's the easy thing. I put on there a million lives. It had some points but I think it was more just, I haven't really come to a decision on the show yet. I really do feel like sometimes it's just kind of dark for the sake of being dark, but there's points where it does really kind of get those in that questionable stuff. Like, was it okay to kill this thing? Like, there is an element of, I guess, humanizing your enemy, which it does okay in. I don't know. Like I said, I'm still trying to decide on that show, but
I think it tries to balance the idea of, like you were saying, a weight with the fact that technically these characters are invincible. I don't know that it necessarily gives a weight to their ultimate goal per se of whether or not they are overpowered or not. That one is a questionable, because they did that okay last season with, there was a particular scene where it really, really felt like they were being pushed to the wire on one of their quote unquote quests. But I don't know that they pulled off the weight. So that's, it is an interesting question. I mean, it does definitely show, okay, look, if you don't do this, this is the consequence. And they do that decent, but it's one of those things that's up in the air. It doesn't really feel like they necessarily, that one's another one of those where the rules in that world are a little bit kind of murky. Yeah, it's an interesting one. That one would be hard to decide whether or not that one actually pulls off the weight. But definitely Grimgarb, Fantasy, and Ash. Definitely, I would agree with Jobless Reincarnation. Definitely agree with ReZero. All of those definitely pull off the weight of each situation.
Not as quite as dire for the most part, but some situation it is. But I would throw a Sentence of Bookworm in here as well, because I think it pulls off a lot of scenes with the weight really well. Obviously, the beginning of it, it's all about the fact that she's in a body of this girl named Mine, who is, we speculate, probably died that day, the moment that she took over her body, because she was extremely ill and very weak.
I was going to throw in omnipotent.
Well, let me finish this first.
Go ahead. I just didn't want to forget. You know me. You know,
saying it out loud is not going to help.
I have the memory of a slug.
But even additionally to that, like later on parts, it does hit on certain things, like not the availability of things, what is allowed and what not, the fact that she's technically part of Commoner's Group, the fact that there's nobles in this world that look down upon them. It has a lot of such, I mean, even getting into the whole thing where there's these crazy plants out in the forest that they have to be worried about and the dangers that those plants kind of, you know, serve, but yet the interesting nature of it. There's a lot of things in it, and everything kind of feels like it has a weight to everything that's kind of decided, and everything that she does, the people that she interacts with. And so, again, it's not death and despair, besides the whole aspect of her issue that she faces when she is, you know, ill. But other than that, it's kind of a more different tone than everything else. So,
omnipotent. The saint's magic is omnipotent. I think that one carried weight pretty well. It very, very quickly established the danger of what they were facing, quote unquote. It's not something that they're facing per se. It's just that it's a looming danger that is coming in. That was the whole reason why she was summoned in the first place, was this thing that they were facing.
Miasma.
And so having to face that and placing it and showing how dangerous that is, immediately placing it upon a character that at the time it wasn't really that he wasn't that much of a significant, but gave her a reason to have an interest in that character, then establishing, hey, this is why you need to be serious about this, placed an immediate weight on that enemy or that danger, and then giving her a motivation to portray what she needs to do and why she needs to do it, and then ultimately at later points compounding on that with battles later to put more weight on the situation and why she needs to take this very serious.
I like how they handled the other girl, and I also want to add, I liked how they handled her. I guess the hesitancy she had to revealing her capabilities because of what it would have meant for her future. So I thought that was had weight. Most comically entertaining Konosuba, go watch it. That's all. Like I said earlier, Outbreak Company is another one. I think that right below Konosuba is Outbreak Company. I think it's absolutely fantastic. Should be watched. So good. Cautious Hero, I think, right underneath there is a really good one as well. It's basically a guy that gets isekai'd and is overly cautious about how he handles situations. Though it kind of gets dark, oddly. Like, really dark. Like, it's suddenly out of nowhere. It's like he's overtraining himself, and then you realize, oh, yeah, that entire village just died because he's overly cautious. And we just got to see a bunch of people die. So, I guess Isekai Quartet's good. It's just kind of a mashup of a bunch of isekais. How did some of Demon Lord Season 1 was really good, but Season 2 wasn't as funny, unfortunately. The next question is basically just what's your favorite of all time, and I'm not going to get into that one yet. I don't want to do the best moments because that's going to take a long time for us to. I did put the gate scene with the guy with I forget what her name was. She was like the military girl, and the prince comes in with the Japanese lady that he enslaved, and he literally gives her the go to beat the living crap out of all of them. It was so good. Like, they all run up with their shields, and she literally just shoots through them. It was just like, it was one of those moments of like, this was like kind of upsetting to see. And to see the characters actually act on it was really good. Like, this is typically one of those ones where it's like, no, we'll handle this in a bit. Everybody calm down. All right, we're going to handle this. Don't worry. Let's let them go. But no, it was literally like, no, handle it. Like, it was like everything every viewer wanted to happen in that scene, it just happened. Like, it literally played on what you want to happen. So it was good.
I would be torn between the Rory in the UN. I also thought of the fire hydrant in Outbreak Company. I also thought about the lake in Aqua in the lake.
Oh my God, the purification. the Ponsu thief. Come on.
speaking of the wiggle finger thing.
Everything in Konosuba.
Yeah. Speaking of which, the Ruger's treasure is
there's
pretty
so
great.
Many Mashuka Tensei, like the pulse. Oh my gosh, we even got 16 with the whole pulse situation.
We even got
so
another Cribs in this last episode. Best Cribs in Mashuka Tensei. So yeah, that show
the treasure of Rudy. Was good.
That's what I was talking about.
Sister realizing that he's a pervert. It's good. Like every episode, I can give you a good scene in every at least one good scene in every single episode of Mashuka Tensei. We'd be here. We just basically go listen to our podcast about Mashuka Tensei. It's literally an entire podcast about it. But no, I don't want to say Grimgar because I don't want to say anything about that. But there's some scenes in Grimgar. Bookworm. Yeah. I just think any moment with mine and her childhood friend, which I can't remember, his name pops in my head for like a split second and disappears. does it start with a F? I think that's driving me crazy. Anyways, ReZero. I think we mentioned several of them in this podcast already, but yeah, obviously, was it episode 18 with the Rem confession? Was just that was priceless. I watched 18. That over and over again.
I think that's 18.
I didn't say 18.
I thought you said 16.
I don't know. I thought I said 18, but there you go. One of those episodes, she gives her confessions, really good. There's so many good as well. We need more. I think if we get another ReZero, I'm definitely going to rewatch from the beginning again. Because I kind of struggle with the second part of the second season, just trying to remember everything. So, yeah. Anyways, best visuals. I want to say, obviously, Mushoku Tensei, they're doing a phenomenal job with that show. Like, everything about that show is so beautifully animated. But art style, Grimgar, I loved it. Watercolor style to it. It was just so unique. I loved it to death.
Yeah, that one was up until we got to Jobless Reincarnation, Grimgar would have easily been a far and away that one I would have... screaming from the rooftops, that's the most beautiful as far as isekai is
artistic
concerned.
Yeah, yeah. It's artistic style too. I mean, it wasn't the craziest awesome animation. There was some stumbling points. They obviously cut some corners because it wasn't like the biggest budget ever, but it had just a great style to it that just definitely make it just stand out from the rest. Faraway Paladin has a very soft color style to it, which I thought was kind of interesting as well. It almost has a graininess to the visual style, similar to Mushoku Tensei, but it just feels very soft the way it looks. So I think that's kind of unique as well. ReZero obviously has quite a bit of a budget going to it, so that makes sense. Bookworm has kind of a unique art style to it as well. Definitely different character designs than usual shows. So
yeah, all of those definitely look fantastic. No matter which one you choose here, they all look...
Konosuba.
Yeah.
I still don't like how Konosuba looks. I like it when it's like over the top comedic, but every other I don't like how it looks. Best animation, definitely not Mushoku Tensei Jobless Reincarnation, like I just mentioned. Definitely not ReZero, like I just mentioned. Faraway Paladin's doing decent as well. Gate had a couple really cool moments in it.
I would definitely double down on Jobless Reincarnation, because I definitely, that was one of the things that I remember to a T, messaging to Andrew, this show looks freaking gorgeous.
Rise of the Shield Hero has had some moments in it as well. Definitely not Soma Spire, So What. Oh my gosh, just garbage animation. I hate it too. I hate it. I really do. I don't think anything else really pops out in my head. Knights and Magic was not bad, and they actually used CGI. It actually looked decently good. Not insane, just saying it impressed me for what it was going for.
18IF, wasn't that an art piece?
Artsy, but didn't look good. It would go in the arts category. That's about it.
It's been a long time, so I don't
know. Saga Tanya Evil is another one where I'd say it's more art than visual animation, because it used a lot of CGI as well. But it had an interesting style to it. So, yeah, that's it for the question segment. I did kind of write down a couple of interesting concepts that isekais are kind of employing. We mentioned earlier about the whole idea of pharma becoming a thing. Do you remember? I'm trying to remember other ones other than Slow Life, Cheap Pharmacist, and Banished from Heroes Party. I know there's more pharmacy-related ones than that. Technically, 300 Years Slimes, she had somebody who was making energy drinks, and eventually she ran into somebody making potions. But yeah, for some reason, I remember making the joke about there being a ton of pharma anime that are isekai, but I can't remember any of them anymore, so maybe that's just something I think. Maybe I'm just like connecting just standard alchemist type stories and isekai together.
Yeah, pretty much is about the one thing that I could say is it seems like, because you got, technically you have the God's Blessing. He's technically gathering stuff, but it's not really ish.
He makes like solutions and stuff out of them, but not necessarily.
Yeah, he's not. I mean, potions. He's setting up a laundromat. So I mean, that tells you pretty much everything.
This is like he's doing everything. They mess with a potion shop.
Yeah,
and diluting him, diluting potions to sell them.
Because Omnipotent is another one where she's going into another world and she's doing herbalism. So
yeah, that's another one too. Yeah.
And I don't think Snow White with the red hair was an isekai, right?
Well, she was making potions too. She was just doing the herbally, and then they had to apply mana to water with the potion and makes.
Right, but she was there. She was not an isekai.
Saints and Magic Power is an isekai.
No, I was talking about Snow White with the red hair.
Oh, no, she's just there. She was running an herb. I thought you were talking about Omnipotent, but yes, Snow White with red hair.
No, I did say Omnipotent, and then
she was
I said
an herbal
Snow
shop,
White.
And then she fled.
Right.
Yeah.
Which, yeah, it doesn't matter. Weird argument.
Any more sequels of that? Ugh.
We do.
That just disappeared. Let's see here. Yeah, Build the Nation isekai. I know Chris is a huge fan of these ones. But yeah, we'd had quite a bit of those. How High School Prodigies Have It Easy in Another World. Tsukimichi has one, Building a Nation. Dungeons & Black Company is technically building a company, but not necessarily a nation.
Same animal.
That time I got reincarnated as a slime, obviously, he's building a nation. And then How a Realist Hero Rebuilt the Kingdom, he's technically rebuilding the nation, but technically the same concept. But I would agree. I actually do really... I'm interested in most of these shows. Like, I think the only one that didn't work for me was Dungeon Black Company, because it literally just, it gets too stuck in the concept of a actual black company and what they thought was funny about that. Realist Hero kind of bored me a little bit, but everything else I've enjoyed. I actually really enjoyed High School Prodigies, even though at first I didn't think I would. But I've enjoyed most of the shows that are technically on the concept of building a nation. It's a different take than just go there, power fantasy, save the world. It's more an idea of trying to, and it most of the time it's incorporate concepts from our modern times into a not developed world that's typically medieval times setting, where they're, you know, pre-plumbing and stuff like that, and giving those concepts to the world, which technically most isekais do on the side. Like, for example, Spirit Chronicles, he gives them the concept of a bathhouse, basically, and it's in a portable bathhouse. But I think that's kind of an interesting way of just doing that concept of just incorporating knowledge that you have into it. Oh, Demon Lord Retry is another one.
Oh, is that the one that I was thinking of with Kendra Suda?
He's Kendra Suda, yes.
Yeah, that one.
And the Not Rim.
Not Rim.
And the girl who really liked
who was definitely not
down
a trap.
By him.
Was definitely not a trap.
And the lady that really liked him talking down to her and his other form. That's a weird show. Just a weird show. I don't know. I almost want to rewatch. It's just a weird show. Reverse Isekai, guys. We talked about this a little bit. Things like Devils of Part-Timer. Recreators is absolutely phenomenal. I hope somebody licensed that besides Amazon eventually. It needs more attention. I really liked it. Great Jahi, Not Be Defeated. Miss Kobayashi Dragon Age is a huge one for a lot of people, which is technically Reverse Isekai as well. But yeah. So what is your favorite Isekais of all time, Chris? I'll give mine while you think. It's probably going to be similar to mine, maybe. I don't know. We never did this, but...
Different order, but pretty much... Well, Konosuba, probably not.
Yeah, my favorite Isekai of all time, starting from 5, is Grimgar Fantasy and Ash, Konosuba number 4, ReZero number 3, Ascendance of Bookworm number 2, and Wushoku Tensei Jobless Reincarnation number 1. And like I said, a lot of that love for Jobless Reincarnation, I think, is in the knowledge of it being continued on. Because I know that something like ReZero was, you know, pushing up there as well. But I think the other interesting thing is with Ascendance of Bookworm, over time, I like it so much. I guess it's this gem that I think most people don't really kind of acknowledge. Are you wanting to look at these again?
I'd probably toss No Game No Life, but I would probably pull Konosuba off. Oof. But it is pretty much the same list.
Oof.
I know. I love it, but it's...
I thought you were going to say Grimgar.
Oh, definitely not.
I didn't know you like Grimgar more than that. So, no, I think if I continued on beyond there, it would go into things like probably maybe put Slime in there, Outbreak Company, Gate, I think is also another solid one as well. So,
yeah, Gate pulls off some really cool stuff. There is a lot of things in there that I really like. I would argue that one has a lot of really good world building in that one as well. But it's a little bit more lighter than a lot of these other ones that we were bringing up. So
yeah. I think the other concept that we talked about a little bit, and I'm not going to get too into the later parts of this, but just like a brief over, because we technically did talk about this in the previous one. But like I said before, I don't necessarily think it's as important now than... It's so funny that when we were talking earlier about things of kind of dropping off perspective of... Chris was really keen on the idea of dropping this label of Isekai because of its importance not really being there as much. I think, again, the thing that I would kind of drop off from our outline that's more equally as important, I guess, that same idea, is the trapped in MMO being its own thing, or at least tying that to Isekai, because it's so, in my opinion, rare. Like we mentioned earlier, where I think that I don't really label shows like Slime, for example, being a trapped in MMO, just because pretty much all these shows now that are fantasy related have game mechanics in it. Like, it's almost like writers and storytellers in Japan are just kind of taking fantasy and just assuming it's always going to have prompts and menus and stat screens. It's like it's no longer a game mechanic. It's just a thing of fantasy now, which I personally don't really like, but I'm not against it at the same time. Like, it's not going to bother me, but at the same time, I hope it... Like, the perfect, the best... implementation of this bad word the best way of, the best way of putting this into fantasy world that I like is Danmachi. Wish all shows did something like that, where it's not a stat screen coming up, but it's more like a tattoo or some way of being able to see what your strength is without having a, you know, like a Final Fantasy 6 menu screen pop up in front of your face that's got a blue background and a white outline. something less obvious than that. Something, again, I think the tattoo, like they did with Danmachi, is just, like, I love that. When that came up, I'm like, wait, is this a game world? No, it's not really. It's just, it's like it's embedded in them. Like, this is the way they see the stats, is their god or goddess has to come in and bring it off of their tattoo to see what they've gained and what skills they've got and what they've improved with. It has the game elements in there, but it's not in your face with a menu. Like, so much better, so what? Where the entire screen is filled with text. But, yeah, like I mentioned before, what we kind of think of this whole concept of being trapped in an MMO or a game is kind of around something probably like Tron. Not sure exactly where the early segments of that, but that's obviously one of the earliest examples we have in entertainment of this concept of being trapped in another world or another game, or at least this concept's probably aimed at more younger audience members that, you know, kids that play video games when they're younger, kind of fulfilling that desire to be able to kind of go into your video game and play your actual character, which I think a lot of us back in the day probably had the feeling of. A world full of Moogles, obviously, as we played a lot of Final Fantasy. But yeah, we kind of were figuring that this starting point for the actual trapped in MMO and games concept probably started with things like, the earliest one that I remember was obviously Monster Rancher. That was in 1999, which was kind of funny because we had that game. It's a really weird game. You had, like, put, like, music CDs into the game tray after you started up the game, and it would, like, summon a monster based on it. They did a remake of that. Did you see that?
Yep.
Ugh. Yuck.
And they said that they have some kind of way of getting around that system, so...
Yeah, it was, I forget exactly what they used. It was something like they looked at your music tracks or something like that. But anyways, yeah, a lot of people are familiar with Digimon. That was a huge one at the time, being transported into kind of a gamey world. I'm not sure if Digimon would be considered, was that a game world?
Technically.
That was just another world, and they had Digimons were helping them.
Yes, it was a digital world. So therefore, it is a game.
Because games are digital. Everything digital are games. If you are accessing a server, it is a game. I'll have to remember that next time I work on a server, and I'll just have to tell them I'm working on a game. Dyack Sign, I think, was probably... I think for most people that... didn't really watch, I guess, more of the more younger type shows. Because obviously Digimon, Monster Rancher were more aimed at younger audience. I think .hack/sign was a more, slightly more mature type show that was focusing on the concept of being trapped. And granted, I wouldn't explain it any more than that because it'd be spoiler. But basically, as you kind of realize as you're watching the show early on, there's this person that just is kind of always there. So I'll leave it at that. And obviously the one that made the concept of trapped in MMO or games or transporting MMO games, like mainstream, was obviously Sword Art Online. As much as you don't like your ex-girlfriend.
That would be tough for me. I'm not sure if .hack or Digimon is probably my first. So
I remember watching Monster Rancher, so I'm going to assume that that was probably the first. But I don't know if I watched that way later. I think I've never seen it on TV.
I don't remember ever watching Monster Rancher, so that's why I didn't mention it.
Yeah. But yeah, Digimon was huge, so easily probably the one that most people would probably say they end up running into. But yeah, obviously the big ones in the transported to MMO games is, again, definitely .hack/sign for me. Sword Art, Lock Horizon, I know is huge for a lot of people. Obviously Overlord is huge. Seven Senses of Reunion, no. Do you love her mom and your two-hit multi attacks?
That was goofy.
No. Full Dive technically at times is a trapped, because technically he sometimes can't choose to log out.
That one is just so wrong. I actually really like that show. Strangely enough, I really like that one. It was crazy.
There was certain concepts that I liked about it, definitely. But it was more in the realm of him realizing it's... How its realism makes him, I guess, feel grief for what he does to characters, which I think is interesting. So
I'm not sure if I was really all that hot on the ending, though. Well, but I did like the show.
Yeah. It was as good an ending as you can have for that concept without feeling source material bait. It was a good way of not being source material bait, so I'll give him that credit. Kuma Bear. She technically is trapped at the time of this show starting, so we don't know how long that lasts. It seems like it doesn't last that long. So, yeah. Cool enough. That's a wrap. That's our Trapped in Another World version 2.0 or Isekai podcast. Hope you guys enjoyed this run through. Anything additional, Chris? Did you decide on your five? Did you say what your five? Oh yeah, you said you were gonna replace one of my favorite shows with one of your favorite shows, No Game No Life. Konosuba. That's right.
Yes.
All right. So everybody, make sure to send Chris hate mails about him not liking Konosuba as much as you.
You know,
it is literally about me not liking Slime as much as you guys.
Since your favorite show is not my number one, exactly. Obviously I have crap taste. So just you might as well just accept that I have horrible taste.
At least I didn't put Sword Art Online on my five, okay, people? Now I'm gonna get hate mail.
I'll make it easy. Your favorite show is my number one. Enough said.
There you go.
You don't even have to worry.
Hey guys, what's your top five? Me too.
I agree completely. 100% with you.
I'm going to do that from now on. Whenever I make a video, it's going to be like, hi guys, thanks for watching. This is my top five favorite mecha of all time. Let's jump into it in no particular order. So what's your favorite top five, guys? That's mine. Have a good day, guys. Please support the channel. But anyways. Yeah, that was a lot of fun, though. I was kind of worried about kind of revisiting this whole concept. But like I said, a lot's happened in 5 years. It's kind of crazy. So, yeah, we hope you guys enjoyed us running through isekai genre, which, again, I'm assuming that a lot of people are like, isekai shows. But hopefully you guys stuck with us just to kind of give some ideas of some stuff that just kind of sticks out from the usual isekai shows, which I can admit there's times where you're like, it's not really doing anything special, but there's still gems out there. And I think like this year more than any has kind of proven that with things like Mushoku Tensei and, you know, Faraway Paladin as well, Tsukimichi, that stuff can still do interesting new stuff. Even though, again, we all know Mushoku Tensei Jobless Reincarnated is the godfather of all isekai animes. It was made back in 2012. So everything is literally a copy of it. We know you don't have to put that comment down below. But,
and it was definitely a JoJo reference.
It's always, which is always a Fist of North Star reference. But yeah, we hope you guys enjoyed. As always, if you're on listening to us on YouTube, make sure to subscribe and leave a comment. Let me know what you guys thought of this whole topic. What's your favorite isekai shows? Let us know. Also, there's links inside the description for supporting us on Patreon and through our tips link. We definitely appreciate everybody that does that. And as always, we definitely appreciate people that tell other people about us, linking us out there, giving us a shout outs on Twitter and all that kind of stuff. It's definitely amazing. We definitely appreciate you guys. And y'all take care.
Os. After you, I'll share my time.